It's showtime.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
You know, the right to bear arms is because that's the last form of defense against tyranny.
Washington is fundamentally corrupt. There are more words in the IRS code than there are in the Bible.
Made in America, heard round the world. You're listening to Blunt Force Truth. I'm Chuck Woolery, along with my co-host, Mark Young. And I've got my work cut out for me today.
Well, Chuck, we're gonna have some fun here today. People are gonna need to use their seatbelts and buckle in just to try to keep up with what we're gonna talk about. But we're gonna talk about stuff that is going to
I have a full harness on.
Good, because we're gonna raise the hair on the back of your neck here in a momentarily. But by any chance, Chuck, have you heard like any kind of giant flip flop sounds coming out of Texas? And I'll tell you why.
I live in Texas, so I should have heard it.
Well, you might hear the giant flip-flop sounds. They're all over the country, and they're being made by none other than Sleepy Joe Biden.
Oh, well, poor Joe. You know, the problem is he said he has to defend his position. Well, he has the Kama Sutra of positions. I mean, there's like 35 of them. How do you defend all those? But go ahead.
Well, here's the problem. The Kama Sutra, yes. The Kama Sutra. I practice that often. So anyways, here's the problem. Biden has this long, long track record where he can't duck it.
Yeah.
He was in the Senate forever. He was vice president. So he's got this long history.
That's why most senators are never elected president.
Well, that and they're not.
They all have records.
The second problem is he's now come out and said he's the most progressive person running for president.
Well, I'm not surprised. All Democrats are progressive. I think this is hysterical because Nancy Pelosi said, what did they say? What do you think? Someone asked her, said, what do you think of the progressive wing of your party? She said, well, wait, I'm progressive.
Yeah, I am.
That's the thing that everybody's missing. They're all progressive.
Which is just another word for communist. But anyway.
Exactly. Exactly right. And that's no joke. It is.
It is. It's a politer word.
Or fascist, either one. They're interchangeable.
But progressive is good at a cocktail party. You know that. You can use that at a cocktail party. You can't say, well, I'm a communist.
You're talking about insurance, not ideology.
Because who doesn't like Flo, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
I mean, Flo seems harmless.
Yeah, of course.
So at any rate, Biden is flip-flopping on every position this guy's taken his entire life. Now, his newest flip-flop. So here's the thing. He now said he's against the death penalty.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Well, that's because the DOJ came out and said they're all of a sudden for it.
Yeah. Except in 1991, Biden introduced his own crime bill,
mm-hmm.
which categorized 44 crimes as capital offenses.
Yeah.
When the Republicans presented a bill with 46 crimes to be capital death penalty, mm-hmm. Biden came back and said, oh, yeah, I've got 51 reasons to kill people.
I have more reasons than you do to kill people.
The Republicans came back with more reasons, and Biden finally put out a bill that says, I now have 60 reasons to kill people. On top of that, the New York Times came out and said, Joe Biden has made everything short of jaywalking a capital offense.
Well, if you don't get killed by Joe, you get killed by a car. So, you know, what difference does it make? You're still dead.
Here is a guy with a lifetime of saying, I'm going to kill everybody but a shoplifter who gets picked up by the police. And now he says, I'm against the death penalty. But come at me, Trump. Come at me, bro.
Yeah, right.
Let's do some push-ups. Let's have a push-up contest. What is up with that? Why does this old man want to have a push-up contest?
He's a joke. Let's face it.
Figured out he couldn't take him behind the barn, I think.
That's the other thing. And that, folks, was the voice of none other than Michael Guy, certifiable. Genius. Well, he sometimes is certifiable, but certified rock star and tech genius.
Okay.
And today, Chuck, we're going to have Michael Guy back on the show, and Michael has brought his friend Bill Binney. Now, Bill is a rock star of his own kind.
He is.
He is he's one of these guys that you see like in a Tom Clancy novel.
Well, actually, there's a movie that someone did. What's his name?
Oliver Stone.
Oliver Stone, yeah. Right. I start to say Roger Stone did his movie, but it was Oliver Stone.
Yeah. So Bill is one of these.
Called A Good American or A Good Patriot or what is it called?
A Good American.
Yeah, A Good American.
So Bill is one of these mad math genius code breaker guys.
NSA's top code breaker of all time. He's a legend. Yeah.
So Michael, Bill, welcome to Blunt Force Truth. We're going to have some fun here, folks. And what you're going to learn about today is you're going to learn about what really happened with the DNC servers. We're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about, is your government spying on you?
Well, the DNC servers, let's clarify that. We're hacked by the Russians, right? Of course, here's the deal. Everybody claimed the DNC servers were hacked by the Russians. Everybody on the left did anyway. And the fact is, they wouldn't let the FBI look at the servers. They engaged someone else who was completely out of the purview to take a look at them, speaking of purview. This has become the common word now, purview. It's in my purview. It's out of my purview. It's not in my lane.
It's not in my purview. I'm sorry.
I can't answer that. It's out of my purview.
We made a comment that not only did the Democrats think that the Americans never read the Mueller report, we now understand that Mueller never read the Mueller report.
That's right. He never took pen to ink. Let's put it that way.
So, Bill, tell us a little bit about yourself. Michael Guy, I'm going to fill in for people. Michael really is a rock star. He was an actual rock star, so it's always fun to have that. Maybe we'll get him to play something in the middle of the show here. But at any rate, Bill, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I got into intelligence in the Army in 1965. The draft was running, so I joined the Army for 4 years because they said, because I didn't want to go to Vietnam, so I volunteered to go to Europe. So they said, we have this program, and you become a traffic analyst, is what they said. Because all the aptitudes I had from testing they did said I'd be good at this. So they for 4 years, I was an analyst in the Army Security Agency.
You went in the Army, and they gave you, like, an aptitude test and said, hey, by the way, you're a freaking genius.
Well, they said I had a really strong aptitude.
And you're like, really? I never knew this.
I was an extreme introvert, by the way, at that time. An extreme introvert. So a lot of mathematicians are introverts. So, but anyway, after that, they sent me to Turkey. You know, so I was in Turkey looking at the Soviet Union, and the lower part of the Soviet Union. And, I solved a few things over there.
I saw that through the heavy lenses of the Hilton Hotel. Right on top of the Hilton Hotel, I looked across the Bosphorus, and there it was.
Yeah, I was in the middle of Turkey, just south of Ankara, or west of Ankara, I think it was. And it was on the Anatolia Plateau, so there wasn't any trees anywhere in sight, you know. It was just like a desert, basically, you know, pretty much like that. So at any rate, I'd solved a few things there, and NSA got interested in the solution. They said, well, we'd like to have you come back here to us. So
really,
I went back to NSA in 1967. I was over in Turkey 66, all of 66 and part of 67.
Believe it or not, I was a code breaker on the USS Enterprise in the middle of the whole Russian thing when it was going on in the 60s.
Did you work with Captain
NSA
Kirk?
NSA never contacted me to do anything.
Yeah. Chuck, did you work with Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock?
Yes, did
you?
Yep.
Or is that a different enterprise? I wasn't sure.
Go ahead. This is Bill's story, not mine.
All right.
So at any rate, I got back to NSA and I started working on the bigger picture, you know, everything and basically in the NSA databases. So I used some mathematical techniques to be able to look at things in a different way than anybody else was doing it. So, I won't go into it because it gets kind of complicated, but it's like set theory and tensor theory and things like that. So I did that kind of stuff and solved a lot of things that nobody else were looking at or could see because of the way they looked at the problem, you know? If you look at the problem in different ways, you can see different things that you can try. If you look at it only one way, then you never, if you can't see it that way, you don't see it at all. And that's fundamentally the way I looked at different things and using mathematical techniques and things
outside the box, so to speak.
Outside the box, absolutely. And, you know, I even came up with some seminars internal at NSA, and I tried to bring them in to give them ideas on how to use these techniques, you know. And I called one of the seminars, I said that the title will be How to Get an Answer Without Having a Solution. So, you know, and people looked at me and
that's called being a Democrat. It sounds very Democrat. We got a lot of answers, but no solutions.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and there are ways to do that. You know, it's just how you look at data. Okay, so I thought that was pretty funny. So, and people said, you know, you are the only person looking at things that way in the agency. Well, that's why I had the seminar. You know, I was trying to, you know, give them exposure to different ways of thinking about things and looking at things. So,
right.
So then I eventually, ultimately, I became the technical director of the world, I called it. It was basically all the analysts at NSA that were writing reports or doing analysis of anything communications-wise in the world. That was about 6,000 analysts. So I had to, I had to figure out what were the technical problems for those, for the analysis of the world. And to me, in the 1990s, I became that, took that position on in 97. It was clear that the analysts were buried with too much data, you know, because the collection was on the networks, were just dumping gobs of material on people. And the way they structured their interrogation of it using a dictionary select, much like a Google query, would produce thousands and tens of thousands of items on them every day. Their standard queries would dump all this new data coming in, tens of thousands every day, and they couldn't see things. They couldn't get through it. It was just too much data. So I said, okay, I've got to figure out a way to make all of this content data manageable for the analysts so they can actually have a chance at seeing the threats that exist.
So it was really, if I could ask you, really, because everything, big data is becoming a problem as much as everybody's being bombarded with too much information.
Well, it's to prioritize it.
It's how you look
exactly
at it.
Exactly what he did.
Difference, though.
Well, it sounds like what you're really doing is less is more, is really trying to find out what to get rid of.
Well, fundamentally, I looked at it as finding what are the needles and what defines the needles and what defines things that are related to the needle. Like the metadata is the key, not looking at content. If you look at content, you're immediately buried. If you look at metadata, now it becomes simpler. You're looking at social networks in the world. So if you know a terrorist, you know his social network. So you pull only the material in the social network, not everything else in the world. That's fundamentally a focused, disciplined, professional approach.
And so a rifle instead of a shotgun.
Yeah, exactly. Now you make content a manageable item.
I can't believe I actually jumped in with something kind of right.
Well, you were a code breaker, Chuck. Come on.
This is true. I'm trying to break this code now.
So you were, by the way, a code breaker. Now, were you like one of these wind talker guys?
No. I used to sit in a...
Did you and Elizabeth Warren do this together? Were you both Indian wind talkers?
If you're interested, I used to sit in a safe room on the USS Enterprise and intercept all the Russians and everything in the Mediterranean. That's what I was... That was my job. Yeah, along with some other people. I wasn't alone.
Yeah, when I was leaving Turkey in June of 1967.
You used to pick up a lot of traffic in Turkey, too.
Well, I mean, a lot of it, at that time, you see, the Six-Day War was ending. And so the NCOIC of my shop up there in Turkey said, offered as before I left, he said, how would you like to take a boat ride in the Mediterranean? And I said, well, I gave him three answers. I said, first of all, I'm not in the Navy. Secondly, I don't tread water very well. And thirdly, I've got orders back to NSA, so thank you, but no thank you. That was the USS Liberty ship.
Okay.
That was the one the Israelis shot up. And they knew they were doing it, by the way, because we had an airborne platform collecting their air-to-ground communications, telling them, this is American ship. The planes were, the pilots were reporting, you know, and they kept telling them from the control on the ground, shoot it.
So, Bill, there's a lot. People get accused of conspiracy theories and wearing tinfoil hats. And yes, probably everyone on this has been accused of that.
So they call me a conspiracy theorist.
Oh, see, now we get called conspiracy theorists and racist. Right. Well, so, I mean,
I only got one of them.
At least you ducked the racist thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, the reality is there is a lot of things going on. I would ask you, when we see a movie like a Tom Clancy, you know, like a Jack Ryan or Homeland or any of this stuff, and we see all this NSA intelligence that's going on in the background, how much of what people are seeing in the movies, how close is any of that to reality?
Well, what was the TV show with
Homeland?
Keith Sutherland? Was it Homeland?
Oh, no, that was 24.
Yeah, 24.
Right. Oh, okay.
We
could see the movie of an enemy of the state back in 98.
With Hackman.
Yeah. About 50% of that was true. You know, they'd show you the visual pictures from, they'd say, satellites up 150 miles.
Right.
I'm sorry. You can't stare at a given ground with that because it's only over the horizon, and it didn't ever change position. It's, you know, you probably have like 10 minutes of coverage of a given area with one of those low-level satellites. So that was not true. So, you know, that basically discredit with this. They're just trying to make it look. That was, I call that artistic latitude, okay?
Yeah, there's a lot of artistic latitude in Hollywood, believe me. I mean, trust me, that's true. Yeah, yeah. So let me focus on something here that you know a lot about, I think. You'll let us know. What about the hacking of the DNC computers during the 2016 election? What do you know what went on there, or do you have a theory about what went on there?
I don't have a theory. I have a theorem. A theorem has some proof behind it. Uh-huh. Okay. Gotcha. So I call it a theorem, and yes. You know, I wouldn't mind if they called me a theorem conspiracy theorem. We're using theorems because yeah.
So a theoremist instead of a theorist.
Yeah, right. So I mean that's the definition of the term in math. So anyway, it's a provable forensically. It's a provable lie. That's all. I mean, it wasn't hacked.
Never hacked. So this was a whole conspiracy about being hacked and never really being hacked.
Yes.
I mean, is it kind of like...
And they knew it from the beginning, by the way.
Is it kind of like Trump, you know, colluded with the Russians, but he really didn't?
Yep. That's exactly the same thing. They manufacture these lies.
What was behind that? Why did they claim that they were hacked?
Well, I think it goes back to, a lot of things happening where Trump was starting to win, you know, and they needed to figure some way of getting around it. It's a conspiracy that came from my view. All the things I have point to CIA as the origin.
CIA was the origins of it.
Yeah,
I believe the actual cause or the axiom genesis of that was that Hillary had a huge computer security.
Yeah, that too. Yeah.
Confidence problem. And in the one of the primary debates against Sanders, he came out and pounded her on the emails. Mm-hmm. She had the investigation. She had people stepping in and out. So what they did was she said, quote, fix it or we all hang. And they went out and they fabricated a story, much like when Bill bombed Libya to cover a blowjob, right?
Yeah.
Come on, we've all done that at one point.
Bombing raid between friends. Anyway, exactly. So what happened was, is they went in and they said, look, man, we're going to need a bigger computer crisis than the, I'm sorry, it was a mistake. So we needed a louder focal point. To distract her computer.
So we needed an enemy.
Refocusing.
But it's a provable lie.
And that's how we got here. And then
still today, people believe that the DNC was hacked. I mean, they believe it.
Yep. Well, that's because it's been repeated by so many people over and over again. That's all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
it's a typical sophist technique.
Well,
and so you're saying that it wasn't hacked?
No. Not
it
so
absolutely much. Wasn't, and you can prove it.
Yeah,
is anybody interested in you proving that?
Oh yeah,
certainly not the government, the existing one, because it's a part of the conspiracy. So, and
the existing one, you mean Trump's government isn't interested in that?
Yeah, that's why I told Director Pompeo that the government was lying to him and the president.
Trump sent head of the CIA Pompeo to see him. It was widely reported.
Yeah.
About the research, yeah.
To see Bill?
Yeah.
A conspiracy theorist, me.
Right.
That's the way it was depicted.
And how did your conversation go with Pompeo?
I mean, I just told him what I had, that I had this basic evidence that disproved this entire theory, and that, you know, and he had people there taking notes, and they said, well, how do you know that? I mean, if these are technical people, why are they asking me this question? I've already publicly said it. They didn't need to ask that question, but I told them.
They do work for the government.
Yeah, well, they were CIA people there, I guess managers, you know, what are managers?
Well, we know Brennan wasn't smart enough to pull this off, correct? No. So somebody else pulled it off. Wonder who did.
Well, let me ask you a question, Bill.
Yeah.
This is perfect juncture. Do you believe that the certain FIBIA, I call them, intelligence agency is capable of fabricating evidence in a case.
Oh, absolutely.
And yeah. So this is the reason that, that Trump is accused of not trusting his intel people, because they're untrustworthy?
Well, I wouldn't put it that way. I would basically say that they haven't told him any evidence about the Russiagate, for example.
Right.
Why would he send me to talk to Pompeo, right, and say, if you want to know facts about it, talk to him? Well, that's as if I'm the only one with facts. Where is the intelligence community? I mean, we pay over $100 billion a year for that community.
Right.
They should have the facts. I mean, they've got traceroute programs in the network embedded, hundreds all over the place.
And so you're saying they're fully aware of this as well?
Yeah, yeah. Traceroute will show you where something originated and where it ended up in the world, you know? Right. So, and it also tells you the timing between segments of the line that was used. So, I mean, come on. Where is the intelligence community, you know?
So, here's the thing that I want to know.
What, Michael Guy? What do you want to know?
When that first, you know, every crime has, you know, a beginning, right? So the liquor store gets robbed. The phone is picked up and they call the police, right? And in the beginning of this one, they picked up the phone and they called not the Capitol Police, not the FBI. All those people were locked out. They call my cousin Vinny, CrowdStrike, right?
Right. Who worked for Hillary Clinton, didn't they?
Yeah, they worked for the Clinton campaign. So
right.
They were direct employees of the Clinton campaign, direct employees of the FBI.
Now, CrowdStrike.
All these Russians were FBI assets. All the guys that formed this total hoax story were assets. But listen, I want to know what they said on that first phone call. My feet hurt. my knee hurts.
Yeah.
The DNC servers are puking out waffles. They had to say something. But here's what I think they said. The Russians hacked us. And that's a big problem for me. And the reason it's a big problem for me is because you've seen what 45 FBI agents and a special counsel team and $40 million can do in 2 years.
Yeah.
Nothing.
CrowdStrike did it in 10 minutes. Now, that's a problem. That's somebody ordering a pizza. So I believe that they are, I look at their business model, and it's called threat actor attribution. But when asking them to define it, to put this whole country on a mess, they say, well, here's how it works. You open up a file, and if you see to be or not to be, blah, 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 and they say, well, you know, Shakespeare must have wrote it. And then they sell that for money.
Yeah.
That's called fraud. That's called for deceiving. And now we have this company. It's not so much that, okay, CrowdStrike hacked it. It's not so much that. It's that they are a threat attribution entity for money. And we all know that there's no way for all the listeners out there.
So you make the threat as big as you possibly can. It's false, and you get more money for it.
Well,
is that oversimplification?
You opened the can of worms, so I wasn't going to go that deep into it. But I'm going to say you can't open a text file.
Thanks, Chuck.
Read some Elvis lyrics and tell me that Elvis wrote it.
Right.
It's impossible. Okay. But they've been Russian hacking on tap. The CEO gets up there. He goes, there's more where that came from. Well, now we find ourselves in a problem. Who's going to pay the rent for that glass building? We don't have a Russian hack every month, but we do at CrowdStrike, because every single time they catch a villain, Dr. Freeze, China, Russia, it's huge. Super Marvel comic villains caught every time. Now, every time CrowdStrike goes to Las Vegas, it's a jackpot. And in the 1800s, if we were cowboys with pistols, we call that cheating, card cheating, yeah. Right? Now, here's what we have. So it's a superhero, a super profitable supervillain Marvel comic type hero that they catch every time. So 2 points. You can't open a text file. And if you go on CrowdStrike's blog and you read around, it says, we attribute this to Russian unit 165252, bingo. And then we go attribute this file, and they say groups are running. These are files, not people. Mm-hmm. But when they you know, I can pick up a hammer and hand it to my friend Joey, and he can club you in the head with it.
Or smash up all your cell phones.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Or 320 hard drives, which is Section 18 destruction of evidence, which they did.
So I have a question here. I want to know, how do all of us get together and start our own crowdsource company? Because it sounds like a real opportunity to make money.
You should see what I've sent Bill Flowers. They're on the way. Anybody would like to get him on their team. But
the card that says rest in peace.
There's a whole gang of guys out there. Like John McAfee, General Flynn, Michael Caputo, Bill Binney, me, and a whole bunch of other guys that would form you want supervillains? I'll give you superheroes because I know all of them. If the right guys came together and offered a real, honest security product without all the hype, and it got back to real data collection and everything, and not all the privacy intrusion and no false claims. You know, I think a big component of a real security company forming is going to be education, because it's the idiots that you let loose onto the terminals that are right.
You see, I have another look. I have a different look at this, and that is, I don't think the deep state is really interested in this. I think the deep state is interested in how they can control the narrative. And I think it's proven every day.
That's right. So
they have no interest in what the narrative should be or what the truth should be. It's just how they can control it.
Yeah. Also the swindle people. Yeah. Also the swindle people. This brings up one of the points I could make here is that, you know, the Vault 7 release or the NSA release of their attack programs in the network. That's hundreds of millions of lines of code, source code.
Huge.
Breaking down to tens of thousands of attacks going through firewalls, operating systems, you know, everything, networks, you know, servers, everything. And they knew about it and have known over the last 20-some years and never told anybody to fix them. That meant we were sitting here all vulnerable and weak and open to being
attacked. Is that how China has stolen so much technology from us?
Exactly.
So let me ask you this then.
That's what I'm getting at.
When we look at what our federal government is responsible for, not all the nonsense that we get involved with, but it's really responsible to protecting our country and our people from foreign attacks.
Yeah.
When I look at somebody like a China that is literally launching a foreign attack on American business and American intelligence, our government was doing nothing to defend us from these foreign assaults.
No. They were using that as a way of saying, we need more money for cybersecurity. That's the swindle. Every time you get attacked, we need more money for cybersecurity.
Well, that's so democratic, isn't it? When I say democratic, so Democrat. Yeah. I mean, it's in order to solve the problem, we need more money. We have the ability to do it, but we need more money. And then they never get to the solution.
But are you saying, Bill, that not only was this, we need more money, were they setting up the environment to allow us to be attacked?
Yeah, it was the same with 9/11. They didn't have the smart programs online to do it. The same here. They didn't fix the problems in security. And they still haven't, as far as I know.
Now,
Wait a minute, Bill. Say that again slower so I can understand it. About 9/11, what?
Well, that's the whole point. You see, we proposed to deploy the Thin Threat program to do technical solutions on the front line in January, starting in January of 2001. Hayden and company refused it because it only cost 1/1000th of what his Trailblazer program was. So you refuse that. That means you're set up to be attacked.
We could have stopped 9/11.
Sorry?
Are you saying we could have prevented 9/11?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Hey, this is so reminiscent of something that's going on all the time that maybe a lot of Americans aren't aware of, but I'm certainly aware of it because I kind of keep tabs on it. and this is an odd example, but it's the same thing. And that is, you can never attack the government. And let me give you an example. Sweden, Germany, everybody has let all these refugees in from the Middle East. They're attacking their people. They're raping their women. They're doing all this kind of stuff. But a woman can't go to the police and say, this Muslim raped me, yeah, because he's a Muslim. And the reason that he's there is because the government let him in. Yep. So the government can't be held accountable as long as you keep your mouth shut.
That's right.
Is it the? It sounds like the same kind of thing.
Well, pretty much. It's the control of the population. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. That's what this, the whole spying is all about, control of the population.
So let me, just so people are keeping up with us here. One, you're saying without a doubt, we could have prevented 9/11.
Right.
No question.
And that's not hindsight. I mean, when you look at things from hindsight, you say, well, I can solve this problem now because in other words, we had the ability to do that at the time and didn't use those tools in our tool chest to do it.
And it was proven.
Because it cost less? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. They traded the security of the people of the United States and the free world for money. And a lot of people have died because of that.
I'm not surprised by that. The second thing you're saying is the DNC servers were never hacked by the Russians.
Right.
And every time I keep hearing, all I see is Boris and Natasha. It's like these guys watch too many cartoons as kids.
That's right.
Where is Moose?
Remember, the big thing that's coming out is Durham, okay, and investigate the investigator. So the entire nation has been through 3 years of cloak and dagger Russian fairy tale.
Yep.
And now the real guys are stepping in. And I've received numerous phone calls to research Bill, go and take a look at Bill Binney's data. And so the last 30 days, you know, it's kind of funny you mentioned the money thing, because in the movie about Bill, this woman, there's a photo of this woman in Congress holding up her hands, and she was a big person at NSA in control of budget. And Bill sits there real and passionate. He said, I didn't think this was about money. I thought this was about protecting the people. This morning before the show, I was, Bill's, for who he is, he's very, very modest. My bio is like this, and Bill's like, here's who I am. It's always, you know, EMC, right? But anyways, the point was, as I said, hey, Bill, you have a wonderful group. You know, they're ex-intelligence guys and the finest that the world has to offer. And I said, hey, why don't you put your link on the website? He goes, I'm not really into, you understand why he's doing it? Mm-hmm. So I'm tugging like a little puppy dog on his coattail. I'm saying, hey, we got to get the word out about your research, you know, and just put a link, you know. So I insisted that they put a link because I want everyone to see what I saw. There's two really important things to see on Bill. I watched, and this is just last night, and I got the hairs on my arm stood up, his address at the Oxford Union to a standing ovation. And I go, this is the guy they told me that was a whistleblower with Tubin in the front row. But, you know, everybody just going, wow.
You mean Jeffrey Tubin?
Yeah, just crazy. It's just crazy. All of the people were, I've seen a lot of speakers who are really supposed to be really great people or notable people, but I've never seen Oxford Union light up. So if you look it up, Bill Binney at Oxford Union on YouTube, I think it's really important for the truth seekers that watch this show to look at that and do yourself a favor and go to Vimeo.com. You know, they banned it on almost every network. So if you want to see it, you got to be a little bit of a knower, go into Vimeo and you can rent it, you know, and running time, 1 hour, 40 minutes, best 1 hour, 40 minutes I've spent in the last year, you know.
Super. Can the average person understand this without being so technically savvy as you guys both are? So Michael and Bill, I tell you what this reminds me of. Again, another example that's kind of off the wall. And one of the great economists, Milton Friedman, begged presidents to do this and begged presidents to do that, showed them data that was indisputable, and no one paid any attention to him. He didn't die in obscurity, but it was like no one paid attention to him. The guy who's paying closer attention to him without ever mentioning his name today is Donald Trump, oddly enough.
Right.
In many ways, not in every way, but in many ways, where no one ever paid attention to Milton Friedman, and Milton Friedman had the answers.
Yeah.
John Keynes never had the answers. They're always paying attention to people who don't have the – why in the hell is that? I just can't get my head around it. Why
about
do they
money and power.
I think
about money and power.
Very frustrating.
I'm going to make a prediction. I predict that someone in the private sector or a group of people in the private sector will develop an honest company. Mark, remember when I told you that today, if somebody wanted to tap your cell phone, I would reply to you, what year?
Yeah.
All telephone calls are digital files now. Yeah. The digital files are coming in through the NARIS and other and into a central. So with grouped queries, you can go in and you can simply, data is a time machine. You can roll all the way back. You know, when critical mass of that system happens, I would say probably in the 7 to 10 year range. But that's the way it's going to be. So to avoid the argument being made that that's a government thing, and if there is to be an outsource program, there has to be an alternative for local law enforcement solutions. There has to be an alternative that doesn't scrape the soul. I think Bill and I agree that it's about keeping the country safe and the community safe, but that is not peeking in everyone's door. You know? So
let me come back to that in a minute. I want to throw a couple of the questions out, and I want to come back to the data. My first question is, we know that Boris and Natasha didn't invade the DNC.
Yep, that's right.
So Moose and Squirrel had nothing to do with it.
Nope.
Who did?
Okay.
That's the good one. That's why...
I'll go with the throat, because Bill's a numbers guy, and then... He's an analyst of the highest order, and I'm slightly different flavor, you know, but here's like what I'm looking at. Okay. We have an impeachment. They told me, try to break Bill's research, try to break it. So I'm like a little puppy dog coming at him. And I said, hey, Bill, I said, is it possible that a parasitic host in a 17 or 13 proxy tunnel pass through. Well, wait a minute. I'll explain it in English.
I'm hanging on by my fingertips myself right now. Don't
and
feel
he knows
bad.
More than I do.
when I hack you and I'm sitting in a Starbucks cafe and I use something called a proxy, it's me attaching to another server and me attaching to another.
So it's an alias, basically. You're picking up somebody else's name and doing it, or somebody else's company.
First, I hack the server and I own it, and I'm invisible with a tickle shell. And then I come in and I put my agent, and then that hacks the next server. And I create a chain of plausible deniability and to hide my identity. And then.
It's basically hiding.
Yeah, hide. And so basically, if there are three servers, usually if you go, aha, we got the server, we got the hacker. So the DNC went to a certain endpoint, right? But behind that, there's another endpoint of another.
Yeah, they just went to a proxy.
Behind that, and they used a proxy through each one to hide their identity. It terminates at a Starbucks somewhere in Europe, blah, blah, blah. That's the Bourne Identity spy story we were all talking about. But here's the problem. I said, hey, Bill, if there was a proxy throughput and there's a endpoint A, B, C, D, E, isn't it possible that the USB stick could be handed by a guy, this, you know, it's a server number 7 or server number 9 or at the endpoint? But there's a problem with that. And I'm going to go through Bill's theory and why his theory proves that the DNC was hacked at endpoint A. Here's why.
So somebody put a flash drive in a computer and took the data?
Yes, but the point is the big argument is the InfoSec community at large has accepted yes, we cannot deny. And they bonked heads and they tried to attack his data and they tried to attack his personality. And he, you know, he's a Dodgers fan. Anything they could come up with, but the numbers just stood. And after the smoke cleared, here's this USB drive still being talked about. And here comes the investigators, and it's all become in the center spotlight. So they say, all right, but the USB drive could have been here, and it could have been done out front of the U.S., the Ecuadorian embassy, right in front of Julian Assange's palm. And I say no, and here's why. We proved it. No one packs a suitcase at the end of a vacation. They always pack the data at the original endpoint, the exfiltration endpoint. Number two, if I broke my own theory after Bill said, okay, there's an opening there in the logic, and I say, no, it's sealed up just on common sense. And then I said, all right, now I'm going to break my logic, and here we go. If I broke my logic and I said, okay, and went back to Bill's logic, and I said, it could have happened at endpoint four in a seven tunnel, right? Seven servers were used to daisy chain from the DNC to a Starbucks in Europe somewhere. If that happened, do you know what kind of story we would have to sell to the public? Russian fairies in pink tutus hopping over the data centers, the wired fences, card key identification. Really? So somebody took that USB drive, and as it went from server to server, those hacked servers, do you know where those servers would be stored? At NOX, Network Operation Centers. They're all high security, video surveillance, card key, eye recognition, thumbprint. I mean, that's not a hackable entity. Do you understand? So if they hacked it and they were geniuses and they had a seven tunnel going, right? They're not going to sit here and hop the fence into Joe's gas station to get the USB drive. Of course it was the A exfiltration point. And now...
So who had the stick in their hand?
I had another suggestion that I put out. I said, no, the Russians teleported in. Downloaded from the server and then teleported out.
So as bad as the Russians are, and we know they are, and they're smart,
yeah,
they're not that good, and we're led to believe that they are.
Well,
because someone else did it, not the Russians. The Russians are the guys they just attacked and said, we'll attach it to the Russians, blame them, and everybody will go for it because we know the Russians are bad. So
this is an Occam's razor issue here, isn't it?
Yep.
What does that mean?
Simplest answer, and the simplest answer is the right one.
It always is, isn't it?
Exactly. It's Occam's razor.
It always is. And the more you complicate it, the more you get into the weeds, and nobody has a clue what the hell you're talking about.
Well, but see, that's why I kept saying, this is why it was false from the very beginning, because NSA has a way of seeing through all that data, all those tunnels, if you will.
And math, if you will, is the simplest way to get to the answer, isn't it?
Well, you have to get to you have to be able to penetrate into the system.
Exactly. But the point is, math doesn't lie.
So somebody inside the DNC headquarters hooked a remote hard drive or a flash drive to a server, to even a terminal, pulled the data off, yanked the stick, and walked out the building with it.
That's right. And let me tell you something else.
Was his name Seth Rich by any chance?
That before we go there, let's just say this. Once they walked out, and if you look at the Mueller report, if you look and you read it, they screwed themselves. They defined an exfiltration and propagation path where no USB drive can exist at the A point. At the end, they say there could have been a USB drive, like Billy said.
But
that's right.
The point is, who in the hell knows this stuff except people like you?
No, it's getting out there. It's quite popular now that the investigate the investigators, the Mueller report is done, and here comes so-and-so and so-and-so.
Well, right now, tens of thousands more people know it for the first time.
That's right.
Because of being here right now. And I want people to pay attention to this. and don't let this out of your memory. This stuff is happening.
Oh, they're gonna solve it completely. And I'm gonna tell you right now, Benny's research is solid. Okay. Every guy's, it's like I said, he's the guy in the end of the Kung Fu movie, and you run up and do a sidekick, and because of math, you just bounce off. And it's like, you could bring any Kung Fu you want, it is logic. It's not going to work. Second of all, if there is a USB stick anywhere in the propagation chain from the DNC building to a Julian Assange's hand, then the Mueller report is lying.
Yep.
That's really a problem. Yeah, because they said there cannot be. They said it was exfiltrated, packed up, and extracted into an archive.
Well, let's be honest.
Apparently.
Let's be honest now.
Apparently.
Be honest about who wrote the Mueller report. Yeah. We know it was Andrew Weissman and his minions. So the Democrats who were at Hillary's party on election night, hoping that she won, are the ones that wrote this thing.
Yep.
That's right.
So why wouldn't it be totally convoluted?
Yeah. He didn't know who Fusion GPS was.
And right.
Was that not amazing?
That was just...
I couldn't believe
it. You know what? I don't believe that. You think I don't believe he didn't know who they were.
No.
I think he was dodging it.
I think you're absolutely right. And in fact, he dodged most of them. Most of the real questions, he didn't want to expose his knowledge of what was going on.
Yeah, that was a sad day for. I've never seen a monkey circus like that in my life. I think there was a lot of perfect. What was the question again? I can't hear. I'm hard of hearing. You know, that kind of thing.
Well, that was all about eating up time.
Yeah.
So Bill, I want to ask you a question here.
By the way, since you mentioned that, Michael, and I don't know the answer to this because I did watch it, but I didn't pay attention. But now that you mention it, it's worth the attention. Did he do that with the Democrats who were asking questions?
I didn't watch it.
I'm sorry?
I didn't watch it at all.
You know, it'd be really interesting to go back and find out if he used the same ploy on the Democrats that he used on the Republicans.
That's
in order to eat up time.
It's been looked at, and the report that I saw showed that his use of delays tilted heavily toward the Republican side and not the Democrat side.
There you go.
Here. Yeah.
There's my theory.
Hey, Chuck, let's take a little break here for a minute to talk about Blue Emu.
You know, this episode of Blunt Force Truth is brought to you by Blue Emu Pain Relief Products. I've been in show business for 50 years now, and I'm not slowing down, but I can always use a little help now and then. And Blue Emu's family of products are made in America. They've become a staple in my life. The deep penetrating formula of Blue Emu Original is best for supporting my muscles and my joints. And I'm sure you've seen it. It's on a shelf in a blue and white jar. And by the way, I also use Maximum Arthritis for any arthritic pain and the lidocaine cream for numbing pain relief.
That's find this stuff everywhere, can't you? I mean, you can't walk into a store without seeing it.
Well, unless you're blind.
But you can even grope for it if you have to.
Yeah, it's there. There's no question about it. Now, not only do these Blue Emu formulas work great, there's no chill, no burn, no odor. Blue Emu works fast, and you won't stink. It's available at Walmart, Walgreens, CVS, Amazon, and other fine retailers.
So, Bill, let me ask you this. Right now, we have a government or people with inside our government who literally are able to go after what was a candidate for president, now a president of the United States. I am seeing other people that are being attacked, whether it was Mike Caputo, whether it is Roger Stone, whether it is other people that names of people I know that people don't even recognize the names, that their governments are coming after them. Our own federal government is coming after them for nonsense.
Right.
Well, when we say being exposed, they don't, when you start throwing up truth and the people who are at fault, they will put you on a cross and nail you to it. That's what they do.
Well, see, so my question, this gets back to the bulk acquisition of data on U.S. citizens and everybody else in the world.
That's my question. Yeah. My question is, how safe is our data? When I call Chuck and talk to him on my cell phone, when I send him an email or a text, how safe is that data?
It's not.
nothing's safe anymore.
No. For example, take this is the charade.
It's so Orwellian, isn't it? I mean, it's just amazing that in the 30s and the 50s, all this stuff was written about. And here it is right in front of our face every day.
Yep, yep.
Well, but Ayn Rand and Orwell, I mean, they pretty much nailed it, what was coming.
Yeah, you need to, your listeners need to Google NSA space Fairview. Fairview is the AT&T program to tap the lines inside the United States. They've got over 80, somewhere between 80 and 100 tap points for that program alone. And with that, this was in the court records from Mark Stein. They showed the relationship with NSA and how they duplicated it. It was like they passed the fiber optic line through a prism, basically a Y connector, and that duplicated in two directions. One went to the NSA room. The other went to where it was supposed to go down the communications line by AT&T. The NSA room then took it and sessionized all the data on the fiber lines using Naris and Behrendt devices and things like that. They could do it at the rate of 10 gigabit lines. You know, they could take the entire line, everything off it. And then they sessionized that, and then they passed that on for NSA to store and search and scan.
And if there's encryption, that's okay.
Yeah,
we'll preserve it until we can break it.
You know, the weird thing about it is that we have a government, and we've always had a government that does this, and a lot of governments throughout the world do it, but we're a free country, so to speak. We have a government that's taxing people. We're paying to be spied on.
That's right.
I mean, it's just amazing.
That's right. Issue is this is unconstitutional.
Right.
Because they don't care about the Constitution any more than they care about Baltimore.
We have a right to privacy in our personal effects and in our papers and in our communication. Now, I'm told, my government tells me, don't worry about us collecting all this data because we're not looking at you. We're looking at foreign bad actors.
That's a lie.
And we're not analyzing any single individual's data. We're looking at it more as big data.
That's a lie.
Tell us about that.
They have programmed. First of all, they diagnose the entire set of collection with algorithms. It's looking at scoring them as to whether or not they were interesting enough to have people look at the data. So, in other words, they'll take all the phone calls, like Unused Dragon or other kinds of programs that translate from spoken English into text, and then they'll do scanning of the text for scoring based on words and phrases. Are there certain combinations of them there? If there are, then they rate the scoring level of interest, the potential interest in that item. And so they do this by hundreds of millions of calls every day.
You know, it's interesting. It's
also billions of emails.
It's interesting, Bill, because what you're saying is, without saying it, for instance, everybody wanted to know what the conversations were between Cohen and Trump. Well, the NSA knows what they are.
They already have.
They know word for word what they are.
Yep.
But they can't reveal it because if they do, then it's going to expose the fact that they know what you're saying every day, too.
That exposes the penetration of the network, yeah.
So I sent Chuck an email.
Let's take an example here, first of all.
I can't believe I'm in this conversation actually adding to it.
Yeah, but well, there you go. But, I mean, after the Boston bombing, the former FBI agent came on CNN. I forget what his name is, but I'll come to it. And he said that on there, he said, well, you know, there was a conversation, a phone call between one of the Sonia brothers and his wife just before the bombing.
I remember
that. The FBI is questioning now, saying, if she doesn't tell the truth, they have ways of getting back to it. Well, the ways they have getting back to it is recorded in translation of that conversation already in their database.
Exactly.
So Tim Clemente was his name.
Yeah. So let's say I send Chuck an email. And we produce a radio program that's topical, and I send him an email, and in my text is we're going to do a show on some type of Iranian attack, some kind of bombing, whatever the case is. But but that email has a lot of keywords in it that somebody might say, wait a minute, this could be a terrorist threat.
You mean like dog whistles?
Yeah.
Well, more not. Because dog whistles are fake. This is so the algorithm's going to crawl over my email and say, wait a minute, this guy just sent Chuck Woolery an email talking about bombing someplace. Is someone going to look at that email?
It may, depending on the scoring, yes. But the point is, if you use the networking, if the social network, you can sort all that stuff out.
I want to mention something while I still remember it, because that's an interesting point. You know what I feel? I feel that Gmail has got something on every, you remember it was john.podesta@gmail.com, so-and-so at Gmail. I believe Gmail and Google have something on every politician. And I think that that Oppo research is kind of going to, you don't really need WikiLeaks anymore. They got all the emails.
Yeah.
And Gmail, if Eric or GoogCap Ventures Inc. or Google decides that they want to get a little Silicon Valley leftist with it, I believe that over the next couple years, you're going to see a stranglehold. I believe that if you wanted to look for the jewel, you know, the Rosetta Stone or whatever, of why are these crazy guys getting elected? Yeah. Because I think that, and you go, where's the head of the snake, right? Gmail has, it's like in the old days, they say, well, Clinton's got something on everybody. Gmail's got it all. Gmail will decide who gets elected and who does not.
So let me ask you,
they've got Oppo search on the world. They've got everything.
History. Let's talk about search history for a minute.
I want to see what Bill says about that too.
So let's say that we're getting ready to do a broadcast and some of our producers in the room are going out and they're going to do some Google history, because we're going to do a show on how easy is it for a crazy person to find out how to build a bomb.
Right.
So somebody in our office is going to go out and they're going to start Googling how to build a bomb so that Chuck can say, look, it is so easy to build a bomb, you can find it on Google. Now, is somebody looking at that search history saying, hey, there's a guy over here that wants to know how to build a bomb?
Okay, now what you're talking about, we had three ways of dealing with finding needles and associated needles in the network. One was deductive, look at the social networks at 2 degrees, that's your zone of suspicion. The other was the inductive, looking at who goes to sites that say things like build a bomb or advocate violence against the West or showing pedophilia material and things of that nature. That's one way where you see that people repeatedly looking at those sites, then they become persons of interest in the zone of suspicion. They need to be looked at. That's for exactly that reason.
So in our case, since how to build a bomb would be something that we would look at once.
In our case, all they have to do is have to go to my Twitter feed and they know what I...
But would they look at that and say, well, these guys only looked at how to build a bomb one particular morning, and now we compare their other search history and they're not looking at how to make bombs. Does that come into play?
Sure. Absolutely.
So how do we protect ourselves from the government spying on us?
That was my next question, is what lines of communication are secure, so to speak?
What about DuckDuckGo? Is DuckDuckGo actually protecting us?
No.
No. I mean, let's put it this way. If they want you, they get you.
Yeah. Well, that's DPI, which is in transit. So while you're on your way, while your packets are on their way to that we won't track you search engine, they're on the line, right? Yeah. And once they hit bandwidth, they're collectible. And they don't need, you know, and then your query and what you typed in, and they can get it on the backside too, because as they're sending that post function back, they can get it then.
Yep, that's right. They can penetrate your computer and take anything they want.
So back in the old days, you see a guy say, I'm not going to call you from my office because I just don't trust the phones. So I'm going down to the phone booth and I'm going to pick up a drop in 5 quarters and call you there because nobody knows where that is. Are those days over?
That's been over for a long time.
Oh, God. So is the safest way to communicate now to mail somebody a letter?
Actually, the externals of the letters are photographed too, for a two-prong relationship.
You know? What? What did you just say?
So my letters are being copied.
Yep. So they're literally reading your mail.
Well, they're not literally reading the inside of the mail, but looking at externals at the where things are from and to.
Mm-hmm.
Like you mail something to some other person in the country, that fact is recorded.
Guys, I hate to say this. I really do. I think this, I didn't know where this was going. I thought this would be way technically over my head, and a lot of it was. But I've got to go to a, I have a dental appointment. I have to leave. And I really don't want to leave. I'd like to have more of this. I find this fascinating.
Yeah.
So is there anything we can do to protect ourselves?
Virtually no, because look at the muscular, the Bull Run program in NSA. that's one out, I think, of S3-1 in NSA, which is the Crippies. And the whole point there is to break every encryption, publicly available encryption system.
And what about Bluffside? Do you think Google was a subcontractor in that? Sure looks like a Google.
Oh, sure. I mean, I would think they're all involved in this. Yeah, absolutely. And Google's doing their own analysis of all the emails they have, too. So, like you were saying earlier.
So, Google is the danger to our election nationally, not the Russians. It's Google.
I believe. Well,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And
it's our own backyard.
Is there any advantage
to us to use multiple devices? Or
no.
So just nothing we can do to hide from our government spying on us.
No, even the Treasure Map program, whose objective is to trace every device on the network, where it is every minute of every day. If you Google that, again, go into NSA space Treasure Map, one word, Treasure Map, and you'll get all the slides on that program, and you'll be able to see the program's objectives. Part of it also was to be able to reconstruct the Tor network, the Tor network.
Right.
Packets and pass them in many different directions, trying to disguise where the original.
Let me help Chuck for a minute. The Tor network, Chuck, is what you would maybe have heard of as the dark web.
Okay.
Sorry, Bill.
I wanted to add one thing that we didn't get in, and that was, if you look at WikiLeaks and the DNC hack, Donna Brazile's DNC fake hack, okay? It's not. Come on. The debate leaker and, anyways. If you look at that and you go, well, what does a WikiLeaks hacker look like? What's the physical description? And you would say Snowden, Manning, and in the Vault 7 stuff, they got a guy for that now. So there's 3 out of 10 major hacks solved. And each one of them, none of them are Russians, and they're all inside guys. So keep in mind, it's a summing junction. When you add up all these things that are starting to come to light and these investigations that are coming out, investigating the investigators, you'll find that the mountain of evidence that this was a fake. And now here's the problem I have with it morally. There are people on trial for lying about a crime that was faked and being questioned by the guys that faked it, the Democrats.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, look at Hillary. Hillary was always calling WikiLeaks Russian WikiLeaks.
I have a real problem with that. So there's people on trial for their lives for lying to their teacher and this and this and that. But it was the teacher that faked the crime. It was the DNC and the Democrats questioning them, and they get an answer wrong, and now they're going to spend, 30 years in prison? So,
Michael, I want to jump in here. When you talk about people that are on trial fighting for their lives.
That's right.
One of those people right now is Roger Stone.
That's correct.
Yep.
And Roger Stone is literally fighting for his freedom right now.
That's right. And he could use...
The government has crushed him.
They've destroyed him, and he could use our help. And I think that if you want to know where the phrase "Make America Great" came from, and somebody might say, "Oh, Roger Stone, why do I have to help him?" I go, "You got it stamped on your profile, MAGA," and they go, "That's Trump." I go, "Where do you think it came from, buddy?" Right. And so I think that we don't leave our guys behind. And the guy that gave us 6 really great presidents, right? This guy's had a big thing to do with keeping us safe. Bill's had a big part of keeping us safe at night. And I say we don't leave our guys behind. So I would urge everyone, if you're a patriot and you want this Democrat attack dog crap to stop, go to Stone Defense Fund, hit the donate button, whatever you can give, and help them not destroy Roger You know, we have to stand up and we do have to band together and say, hey, no more. The government's not going to spy on you and crush you.
So it's stonedefensefund.com?
That's right.
Okay, so, you know, this goes to the show notes. We'll have a link to it.
This is so typical of government prosecutors. And I'm going to say this again. I've said it before on the show, and whether people remember or not, I don't know. But I have a friend of mine who was being prosecuted by the government, and he went to four different states, and he won every single time. And and his lawyer walked out, and the prosecutor was standing there. He looked at him and said, well, we just have 44 states to go.
Yeah.
So the point was, it wasn't that they couldn't convict him. All they could do is crush him economically. And,
right. Yeah.
And that's basically what the government does, is that they put these pit bulls in there on the Democrat side. Weissman is the guy. I don't care. I'm focusing in on Weissman. He's the guy. And he ran this whole debacle. And he's the kind of guy that the government has working for them. Friend of Mueller and friend of Comey. And
you know, with unlimited resources.
He's a bad guy. Yeah. They have unlimited resources. No person on earth can stand up against a government prosecutor money-wise, because they can spin you into eternity. They just can take everything you have.
Now, Roger Stone is not rich, right?
No. They've destroyed him. They keep in mind, we're talking about $40 million and an attorney for each subject and this and this and that. I would plea to the public, and I would plea to all conservatives and Republicans out there, you know, he's a big part of the Republican Party. And it's just like, you know, I would urge everyone to go to stonedefensefund.com and say no more, because we just get pummeled. You know, I don't want to hear. And they're going to keep doing it.
Of course.
Well, I want people to understand they're not giving their money to a rich guy. They're giving to a guy who's fighting for his freedom, who is now broke because the government has drained him.
Hey, they broke Flynn. I mean, come on.
Yeah, they tried to do the same thing to us, too.
They did?
Oh, yeah.
You say us, who do you mean exactly?
The Kirk Wiebe, Ed Loomis, Tom Drake, and myself, and Diane Rourke. All of us were part of the opposition to the bulk acquisition program, and we said so to the proper channels through the intelligence community inspector generals, and also through the House and Senate intelligence committees. And right. You know, after that, that's after they raided us in July of 2007. After that, in between that raid and early 2010, they attempted three separate times to indict us. The first time they did it, which I had direct evidence that to the contrary, so I told our lawyer, and he relayed that on, and they dropped that one. Then they tried it again. I had similar data, and they dropped that one. The third time they tried it, they said they were going to indict us, and they had an indictment drawn up. Well, I had been assembling all the evidence of malicious prosecution on the part of the Department of Justice. So I was about to attack them, because I was going to let them do that kind of crap with me. So I knew that Tom Drake's phone was tapped, because they were really after him. So the FBI was listening to everything he was getting. So I called Tom, and I told him that our lawyer had informed us that they were going to indict us. And I said, now I've assembled all this evidence of malicious prosecution on the part of the Department of Justice, and here it is. And I read it across the phone. So that when I'm reading,
so they got it.
I'm pulling a spy thing. I'm talking to this FBI guy while directing it to Tom. Okay, so
now that's a dog whistle.
Yeah. And so what I did was that at the end, I said, after I read all this evidence across to them, at the end, I said, now, Tom, tell your lawyer that we're going to charge these guys with malicious prosecution when they take us to court, and we'll produce the evidence in the court. And so, and then I just hung up. So guess what happened after that? 1 month later, the Department of Justice offered us letters of immunity without even, you know.
And whose Department of Justice was that?
Ours.
I know. What under what president?
Well, it was under Mueller and you know, all the guys. It was under
the same guys.
Yes, that's right. That was 2010, so that would have been Obama.
Mm-hmm. So, folks, if you think for a moment that what has happened to Bill, what has happened to Roger Stone, what has happened to General Flynn can't happen to you. You are living in a fantasy world.
That's right. You are warning your children not to go on Twitter and not to go on Instagram and things like that, to do things that will live on for the rest of their lives. Mark's got news for you. Yeah. It's going to live on in your life too. You got to be very careful.
I had one more thing to add to that story, if I could.
Sure.
Shortly after that all took place, about a month after the end of it, and they offered out letters of immunity, all of a sudden someone, there are really good people in the DOJ too, they're not all corrupt. So somebody there smuggled out and passed us a draft of their indictment of us. So all that did was add to the ammunition of actually lying in court papers that the Department of Justice was doing. So we just had more foundation for a malicious prosecution attempt. But since then, we have not been bothered by anybody. But unfortunately, Roger didn't have that kind of knowledge or that kind of data.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Folks, what I want to say to people is if you think you're beyond the reach of your government, you are clueless.
Yeah.
That's right.
We are all within the reach of these people. And we need to stick together. And I think there's two things we need to do. One, we need to support each other.
That's right.
Which means we need to get out. And right now, Roger Stone is the guy we need to help. I personally will go to the website. And I will go to the website. And I will give Roger some money. And I hope our listeners will also.
As will I.
The second thing.
Defense.
Right, Roger Stone. StoneDefenseFund.org or .com.
StoneDefenseFund.com.
Okay, and if you go to the show notes at BluntForceTruth.com, we will have a link in this show notes. So don't worry if you're driving. Don't worry about it. Go to the show notes on the website. You'll be able to get it. The second thing is we need to be careful with what we put out there.
That's right.
Chuck just said.
So what happened to the First Amendment? Did Google and the government just kill it?
Basically.
Well, I think you're thinking of the Fourth Amendment in this case, but
well, no, how about the First and the Fourth?
But
and
they're all out the window anyway.
Fifth and Sixth, too. Don't forget the Fifth and Sixth.
That's right.
And if we get rid of the Second, then we can really bet that the rest of them will absolutely get crushed.
Collapse.
Yeah. Well, that's why we have a Second Amendment.
Right. It's to keep the rest of them. Yeah. And the other thing I'm going to say to people is, besides for being careful with what you're doing, we need, as conservatives, as patriots, as Americans, we need to keep holding these politicians accountable for this stuff.
Absolutely.
Vote them out. Let them know you know. Let your congressperson, your senator know that you are aware of what is happening.
That's
you do not stand for this.
We got to show up and we got to show them what we're made of, man. The other side this is vicious. This is the Spanish Inquisition is what it is. And it's turned out to be a big hoax, you know, but they're taking people's lives because of it. And it's all politically charged, and bit by bit, data bit by data bit, we're destroying, we will get to the truth, and we're very, very close. And it just keeps marching forward. And now with this investigate the investigators thing, this house of cards is coming down. We're going to tear this playhouse down, baby. I'm going to tell you what. It's about the truth, not about politically charged agenda.
Big Brother is real, and Big Brother is here.
That's
right. And we have to, I would say we have to always remember as Americans that democracy is not a spectator sport.
Yeah.
We have to get out there and get in the game.
Hear, hear.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Michael. We really appreciate your expertise. Even I understood it. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
So simple, even a game show host.
Even a game show host can understand. Exactly right. Yeah, thank you both very much. And that's our show for today, folks. We hope you enjoyed it. If you go to, tell them where to go, Mark.
Well, by all means,
in a nice way.
By all means, do us a great honor, if you would. Go to iTunes, go to Stitcher, go to Podcast One, where we are syndicated. Leave us a review. And here's something I want people to really do on this show. Take a link to this show and send this show to people who you know aren't listeners. Tell them you need to know this information. Go listen to this episode. You need to know this. Send a link of this.
to someone else. Because, by the way, we need folks, everybody to know this.
Understand this isn't a bunch of conspiracy theorists getting ready to shove things down your throat. This is real stuff. This is going on today.
This is a conspiracy theorem, Chuck, not a conspiracy theorem.
That's exactly right.
I can Webster that, but anyway.
Bill, Benny, I would say with these jokers, they call the 17 intelligence agencies said this and this and that. Well, guess what? Benny's the king. Benny is just as qualified, more qualified to say what happened, because Benny is 30 years. He's their main guy, 30 years at NSA with honor. Okay. And his ethics, they're unbreakable. You know, he's a real, I mean, I've had the blessing to know him and to study him, and he's real. He's
and we do too, and so does our audience.
But Bill, I hope we can bring you back and drill into this.
Sure, I'd be glad to. Yeah, absolutely. I'd be glad to.
Because there's a lot more we can cover here.
Oh, absolutely.
Again, that's the end of our show. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you next time on Blunt Force Truth.